Okay, how many credit cards are in your wallet? The only card you need is the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card, which offers rates as low as 7.24% APR. When unexpected expenses arise, you need a credit card with options, like the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card with no annual fee and no balance transfer fee. Annual percentage rates apply, member qualifications apply, but the rate is variable and it applies to Visa or Platinum Card, subject to credit approval and subject to change. For full disclosures, visit ukfcu.org, federally insured by NCUA.
Owing is a paid program on 630 WLAP. This is the Tom Dupree Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball. Your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the caulk.
We're not gonna take it.
Just because I am. Same old places where the memory of her lingers.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. This week joining us, Adarsh Meshru, Philip Sexton, Mike Johnson, and our host, Tom Dupree.
All right, I'm going to tell you all a little story. Keep it going. My brother and two friends of ours were going camping one summer weekend at Barren River Reservoir, and after about 6 hours of that, we decided let's go to Nashville. So we got down on Printer's Alley, and we ended up at the George Jones Possum Holler. Now, this guy wasn't playing. A guy named Ronnie Millsaps was playing. This is Leon Russell, who's not from Nashville, but from Oklahoma, and really made his mark playing a different kind of music. But there was a certain sound that defined the country music world in Nashville for many years, and it was this sound. And so my wife can roll her eyes because it's not fast enough for her, but this is the sound that made all the other performers that are now living off being in Nashville. And he's basically paying a tribute to that style of music. And there were certain record companies, and they limited who could play at the Grand Ole Opry and who they would get airplay to. But there were a lot of little country music stations, one of which was one in Georgetown. And there was the Esco Hankins Record Store over here on Limestone, which was like Lexington's version of the Ernest Tubb Record Store. And a certain type of musician got played. It was this style, and the pedal steel was, you know, a huge part of it. Pedal steel players were in great demand in studios around Nashville. You know, every song had one on it.
Yeah, when he first started singing, and when you start listening, and if you just switch the words out, it sounds very, very similar to, and I had to Google it, David Allen Cole. You Never Even Called Me By My Name.
It's sort of similar. That's a different song.
It's a very, yeah, but I'm saying, like, well, you were saying, like, how this was, like, a setup.
You going to turn it off? Okay. It's fine. You can go ahead and turn it off. But the point is, it's David Allan Coe is doing a parody of, because he's pissed off at Nashville in some ways. He's reverencing it. David Allan Coe comes from a different deal. He was more of an outlaw. I mean, he was always getting in trouble.
But I think the interesting thing to what you were saying, though, is that this guy and some others, you know, they kind of laid
Leon Russell.
They laid some framework, you know, because that whole beat and rhythm and the way that the music's played is, I mean, it's the same almost.
That's the old Nashville sound right there. And that is an old song that was done by, I don't remember who else, probably Porter Wagner or somebody. That is the sound that made Nashville. It's not bluegrass. It's not Garth Brooks. It's this. So it ain't even George Jones, to be honest with you.
Well, a lot of the old Southern gospel music had that same kind of sound,
yeah,
too.
And it did.
Which was a copy from that.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That song was made more recently. All right, let's get into the investment stuff here. Kathy Wood's Ark. I'm sure they played that kind of music in India, didn't they?
I've never heard it.
What's the problem? What record stations were you? What radio stations were you listening to? Somebody in India had to have been playing that.
I'm sure someone in a country of 1.4 billion people was playing it.
Oh God!
They had to have known about it, even prior to the internet. Name another fund manager that sells invest in the future onesies and analyst hoodies on its website. This article is called Kathy Wood's Ark Wasn't Built for a Flood. Ark Invest hasn't done as well for investors as charts suggest, and it has done so through some concentrated bets. Just as unusual as Ark Invest's marketing has been its performance, growing its assets more quickly than any active exchange-traded fund firm in history. Kathy Wood's firm went from $3.5 billion under management across several funds shortly before the pandemic struck to hit $50 billion a year later. But that rapid growth has come to bite her investors. Even after a major tumble in the past few months, the actual damage isn't obvious from a longer-term look at her fund's performance charts. So many investors piled in relatively recently, though, that her actual wealth creation record is unimpressive. Okay, now, as for Kathy Wood and her company, the timing could not have been more fortuitous for her to be in the investment business with ETFs, buying tech stocks, and marketing herself the way she did. She picked up a lot of business, but it seems to me it's very similar to what you saw with companies like Robinhood, picking up assets, picking up investments. Her success and her growth kind of paralleled what they were doing.
This phenomenon isn't new. I mean, you always have the star manager. You can name a dozen of them over the last 12 years. You know, I mean, there's always a new star manager out there. The issue is, so if you look at pick any of the ARK funds, you know, from March of last year through March of this year, the performance is up. Like it's gone up. So you look at the chart, boom, you got an up chart. The problem is most of the people in that fund didn't own it in the beginning in March of last year or April of last year. The bulk of the money that has come in has been, you know, in the last probably 6-7 months after people started talking about it, but started becoming the trend, you know, the hot topic of discussion, Kathy Wood's ARK funds, and you started gathering all these assets. So you as an investor, you buy the fund after it's gone up X percent. So even if you look at it, you know, anybody can pull up on Yahoo Finance what the 1 year, 2 year track record of any ETF fund it has been. You look at it and say, well, man, this thing's gone up X percent, 50%, whatever it's been. That's great. Well, yeah, but what's it done since you have owned it? And the problem that she's facing, and that a lot of these star manager fund managers have faced in the past, is once they start getting all this new money coming in, they have to get that money invested. In her case, the issue has been highly concentrated positions in generally smaller, more illiquid positions. Or if they're a value investor, Bruce Berkowitz, who runs the Fairholme Fund, was a top fund manager, value manager, ran the fund with concentrated positions. Once he became the star manager, started gathering all these assets, couldn't adhere to the same principles because you can't buy, you know, in one of the ARK funds, their position's like 17% of a small tech company. In the Fairholme Fund at one time, there was a massive position in Sears Holdings, all these different concentrated positions. And it's as the funds come in, they become, or the money comes into the funds, they become victims of their own success.
Another problem is the fluidity of the portfolio itself. People putting money in, people taking money out.
Right.
So it's not like you have a fixed amount of money to play with. You might have X amount this week, and then next week you get a bunch more, or you could have a withdrawal. You're not able to, you know, you're trying to invest hitting a moving target.
Right. Well, and you have two different vehicles with Fairholme Fund or the more the open-end mutual funds. If you think of a traditional mutual fund, you have redemptions. You know, when the manager's hand starts turning against them, you have all the redemptions. They have to liquidate things. But then even with an actively traded ETF, even if the shares themselves can essentially be created, you're dealing with illiquid or outsized positions, which even if it doesn't affect, quote unquote, the portfolio, that affects the market in those Absolutely. Securities. And so it's it equates to the exact same problem that an open-end fund has on an actively traded, exchange-traded fund.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that always interests me and what's interesting here is that you have all these people piling in based on historical returns, thinking that what happened last month is going to happen next month and the month after and the month after.
Right.
Same principle with certain things like Bitcoin, Dogecoin, GameStop. You know, Hertz when it was bankrupt and it popped and you know, all these things where...
Every year, compliance regulations change thousands of times. And every year, ADP makes thousands of seamless platform updates so businesses can focus on everything else, like running their business. Grow stronger with ADP. HR, talent, time, and payroll.
The problem is you have a huge chunk of investors out there that invest solely on, I guess, what they see happening.
Momentum.
Versus, you know, digging in and knowing actually where they're putting their money. You know, because, and I said this to you, Mike, and I was talking to one of my friends, there's always going to be that one poor schmuck. The guy that bought GameStop at $490 that it's now sitting at like $150. Going, wow,
I took
it on the chin.
Little timing deal.
It'll come back.
Yeah.
You know, and or the guy that...
Of course, in that instance, they're, what, 2 days early?
or like the people that bought Dogecoin right before
Saturday Night Live
and, you know, watched it go from 70-some-odd cents down to, like, 40 cents.
Is that because Elon did a poor job on Saturday Night Live?
He said it was a hustle.
Yeah.
It was a skit.
It's up big today because Elon tweeted again and said that they're going to try and improve it.
Yeah. He tweeted, but the sad thing, it's still not back to where it was.
No, it's not.
You know,
his deal, I mean, so he said, remember when he said that Tesla's getting bought out at $420? He had financing. SEC comes out. Whatever came of that? He's still out there blowing his mouth off. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
that was like freaking, that's as bad a manipulation thing
I've
ever seen in my life. You know, if I did something like that, bye bye Dupree Financial Group. You know, it's all over with.
Right.
He does it and he gets richer. I mean, the stocks were 800 to 900 now. Or?
I mean, you look at
around
600.
Okay,
SEC. They slapped him on the wrist. I think they took away his phone for a while essentially. But you know, you think of how big a part of the market he influences. I mean,
he's the richest guy in the world now, right? Is that what they say?
I think he's the second, maybe. Jeff Bezos is still the richest.
Still the richest. Yeah. Okay.
But you think of the financial part of the market that he's influencing now with the cryptocurrency and, you know, where Tesla is long Bitcoin with their treasury money, basically. It's amazing that he can say what he says and get away, knowing the sway that he has on the market. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Pretty incredible, really. I didn't get away with it.
Yeah.
So we're kind of in a market nowadays made up of images. You know, images sort of hold sway in many ways. It's not to say that that's never been the case before. I think you in any speculative, frothy markets, you have that sort of thing going on. But you have to really look hard or the research-driven elements of the market to separate those out from the image-driven elements.
Well, and to that point, this other article that I wanted to bring up, where it was from MarketWatch, and the headline says, Ackman says he kicks himself for not understanding cryptos like Bitcoin, but says it has no intrinsic value. So
that's what I just said in our newsletter.
That it has no intrinsic value?
None.
Yeah. And Ackman is a pretty brilliant guy. I mean, he can be kind of arrogant and boastful at times, but he's a pretty brilliant guy. The interesting thing is, and
sometimes.
Yeah. Well, everybody.
I tell you, arrogance, that hedge fund guy we saw at the Grant's thing, and I brought up aircraft leasing. What was that?
Einhorn, David Einhorn.
Yeah, God, what a jerk. I mean, you know, what a arrogant little 40-year-old.
So what was his response?
He just like, what do you mean saying something like that when I'm on stage? Yeah, well, I'll say it. And he's a hustler. Those guys go to those events for one reason only. Jim Grant, this is the thing they don't tell you. You're going to listen to a bunch of pitches for stocks that hedge fund guys are long.
Mm-hmm.
That's the deal.
Well, yeah, got to drum up some. They're trying to be.
That's how Jim gets them.
They're trying to be. We just talked. Elon Musk, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're always pitching something.
Buy my Dogecoin.
Yeah. Exactly.
But the interesting thing and the takeaway that I take from this article is that yes, and everybody at this table regrets that we didn't buy GameStop at $15 a share. You know, golly, that'd have been great if we could have hit the dinger on that one. But and that's what he says, you know, like,
speak
wow,
for yourself.
I wish I could have understood crypto, like what it was going to do and buy it. But at the same time, he understands that his research driven approach is what's going to inevitably keep him more times than not from being, as I said, that last poor schmuck that buys something at the very peak. Just because everybody else is doing it, you know, not because, it actually has a value.
Let's go down that road a second, because let's say, I honestly don't know if I would wish that I had bought it. I mean, from, you know, immediately the emotion, I mean, you know, says, yeah, I wish I'd bought GameStop or Dogecoin 6 months ago. But when you really think about it, what, I mean, me knowing myself, if I had bought that and it had gone up 10,000%, which is what Dogecoin did.
You'd have freaked.
Well, no, not that. What would that have done to me long term? You know, because I would start thinking, man, look how smart I am. This money that I've made here.
You would have retired.
but I don't know. You know, you think about it. What would I have bought then after that? And, you know, what would be the ultimate outcome of it? Because it's quote unquote easy money, if you will. It's hitting that lottery. And you know what happens to people that, you know, win the lottery. I mean, just statistically.
You know that.
I don't know.
What you're saying there, this is the way I put it. I don't like buying things that I don't know how I made money in them. The same way I don't like buying things that I don't know how I lost money.
Yeah.
Because I've gone from investing to gambling. And that's okay if you're a gambler and you like gambling. Because that means you're an action junkie. We've talked about this. But it's not helpful to me to get rich or make a lot of money off something I don't know how I did it, because there's no work involved. I have a funny feeling like I didn't earn it.
Yeah.
And if I lose money doing the same thing, it's like I stepped up to the blackjack table and just blew it that way. Yeah. So none of that ever has made me comfortable. And it doesn't make my wife comfortable either.
Which is ultimately the most important thing, right?
Well, it's the one I got to live with.
As they say, the last one you hear at night before you close your eyes and the first one you hear in the morning when you open them.
I hear Jasper.
Oh, okay. That's one of our dogs. All right, are we wrapping up this segment? It sounds like we might do. And by the way, the comment was not fast music. The comment was upbeat. So on that note, I'm going to start our calm, quiet, somewhat twangy music.
Tell that to people in Nashville.
That's the way it used to sound, and people love it. It's certainly a different sound, and it's to be appreciated. That said, you are listening to the Tom Dupree Show with Adarsh Meshru, Philip Sexton, Mike Johnson, and Tom Dupree, powered by Dupree Financial Group, coming to our studios on Main Street. We will be back in just a few minutes with more of the show. Stay tuned.
Same old places where the memory of her lingers everywhere.
Colonials Network was
Russia hacked.
This week,
the fuel shortages were
happened here.
Rocket attacks.
Israel
has a right to defend itself.
Liz Cheney,
the former president, never again.
Every day,
you no longer need to wear a mask.
News Radio 630 WLAP.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
Live music is coming back.
Let's get it started.
On September 17th and 18th, our iHeartRadio Music Festival returns. Live from Las Vegas, 18 superstar artists, two nights, one stage.
The biggest music festival in the world.
iHeartRadio. If you're a Capital One cardholder, secure your seats during our early access sale starting Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific at iHeartRadio.com/festival. We'll see you in Las Vegas.
Now serving F27 at DMV window number 16.
Okay, Rose, we're second in line.
Perfect, Rose. You remembered the birth certificate? Yes, and we have our electric bill.
Excellent.
We'll be Real ID ready in no time. Real ID ready to visit our grandson, Ricky, at Fort Bragg, then fly to New Orleans for Jazz Fest.
Pardon me, are you talking to yourself?
I'm sorry. I guess I am.
Talk yourself into Real ID readiness. Make a plan at dhs.gov/realid.
Festivals, concerts, dancing, going to the movies. We've all missed out on a lot this past year. But there's one thing that we can all do to help us get back to where we want to be much faster. Get the shot.
Get the shot. I did.
Recibe la vacuna.
I got the shot. Get your shot today.
Visit KAHP.org for more information and to find out where you can get your COVID-19 shot. Brought to you by the Kentucky Association of Health Plans.
Go to KAHP.org and get the shot, Kentucky.
It is a great looking Saturday. Beautiful start to that weekend with a mix of sun and clouds. We'll see a gusty wind today and temperatures reaching the low 70s. From the WKYT First Alert Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Chris Bailey.
Broadcasting live 24/7 from the heart of Big Blue Nation, this is News Radio 630 WLAP, an iHeartRadio station.
Attention Social Security and SSI recipients. If you did not receive an economic impact payment for your eligible spouse or dependents,
on May 28th, critics rave. This is the experience theaters were made for.
Run.
A Quiet Place Part 2, rated PG-13, May 28th.
Every year, compliance regulations change thousands of times. And every year, ADP makes thousands of seamless platform updates so businesses can focus on everything else, like running their business. Grow stronger with ADP, HR, talent, time, and payroll.
You may need to file a 2020 tax return with the IRS and claim the recovery rebate credit. Go to ssa.gov/EIP to see if you need to file a tax return and if eligible for other refundable tax credits, like the child tax credit. That's ssa.gov/EIP. Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
It's all about the nose. It's your air filter, the first line of defense against bacteria and viruses. If too many germs get stuck in your nose, guess what? You get sick. That's why it's so important to keep your nose clean, just like washing your hands. Nasal irrigation gets rid of germs by rinsing the nasal cavity, but neti pots are hard to use and, frankly, kind of gross. Now there's a better way to keep your nose clean and help your body protect itself. It's called Navage Nasal Care. Navage uses powered suction to flush out allergens, mucus, bacteria, and viruses. Millions use Navage for fast, all-natural relief from sinus congestion and allergies and to breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, and feel healthier without drugs. Navage is easy to use, affordable, and comes with an absolute guarantee of satisfaction. You wash your hands and brush your teeth every day. Now it's time to start cleaning your nose with Navage. At Navage.com, CVS, Walgreens, Bed Bath, Target, and Rite Aid. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E. Clean nose, healthy life.
630 WLAP.
I'm up on the tying wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game. I'm up on the tightrope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see. And the wire seems to be the only place for me. A comedy of errors and I'm falling. Like a rubber giraffe, you look.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show. Tom Dupree with backup singing. Believe it or not, this is the same artist that we played in the first segment. This is a little more upbeat. Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show with the Darsh Meshroo, Philip Sexton, Mike Johnson, and Tom Dupree.
I want to read a little bit about Leon Russell because he, keep it playing. He died in 2016. He was from Oklahoma. These are some of the people that he played with in his career. He actually played with the Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, Eric Clapton, Ringo Starr, George Harrison, Elton John, Bob Dylan, Frank Sinatra, the Rolling Stones.
So how did he end up old school Nashville like he was in the song in the first segment?
Because he loved all forms of music, and he played them all. He also, my friend Joe Turley, who grew up on Summit Drive, played in Leon Russell's band at one time. See, Elton John said that he was his biggest influence as a piano player, a singer, and a songwriter. On hearing of Leon Russell's death, he said, "My darling Leon Russell passed away last night. He was a mentor, inspiration, and so kind to me. I loved him and always will." Elton John said, "When his Greatest Hits album came out, I started to cry. It moved me so much. His music takes me back to the most wonderful time in my life, and it makes me so angry that he's been forgotten." So, you know, he was a substantial guy. He never had a huge career as a front man. He was more of a backing keyboardist and things. I got to know him. There was an album that came out, I guess I was 13. Might have been 15. Called Mad Dogs and Englishmen. The front guy on it was a guy named Joe Cocker. It was a group that they all put together, and they traveled on the road quite a bit. It was a whole bunch of people, a lot of them. And it is a fantastic album. Joe Cocker, they had, this guy named Jim Keltner was on it, and different people, guys on drums. But Leon Russell was their keyboardist and sings on some of their songs, and that's a great album. So, anyway, I don't have it. I don't know. I've probably got a copy of it somewhere. I've had the CD, but I don't know where it is. Okay, guys, what do you want to jump into?
I think we should, Darsh, if you want to lead off on it, but I think we should talk about inflation. I mean, that's been one of the main drivers of the volatility in the market here recently. And we've talked about inflation really about the last probably 3 weeks, just touching on it. But, Darsh, there was the most recent numbers that came out. I mean, the headline looked – it was alarming – but really, when you dig into it, there's facets of it that, you can explain some of it.
Right. So the headline number was 4.2% consumer price index, which is CPI. That's a measure of inflation, and that does seem pretty high. Really, over the last 12, 13 years since the financial crisis, inflation has been very low, 1%, 1.5%.
Muted.
Very muted. When you think about why that number was so high, so when you put it in perspective, that number was for the month that ended, April, basically. And when you think about April of 2020, that's when, everything was basically shut down.
Right.
No one was buying anything. You couldn't really go out anywhere. You couldn't shop. And there was panic. So at that time, the economy went into basically a deflation. So when you compare that point to April of this year, when, you know, things have basically started going back to normal, there was a sudden, spike in, people are eating at restaurants more, they're traveling more, they're staying at hotels. And there's also been shortages in certain areas. Supply chains around the world have been disrupted because of COVID. And things are still not flowing as they should be. Part of the reason is also that during COVID last year, manufacturers, suppliers of various, parts and such, semiconductors, for example, assumed that it would take time for demand to come back. So they did not, keep producing. But demand came back a lot sooner than anyone expected. So now all of a sudden, we keep hearing about a shortage of chips, that go into cars or computers. And there's also been a shortage of homes, there's all of a sudden there's more demand for homes. So when you break down that 4.2% number, a lot of it was mainly automobiles. There's a big shortage of cars and rental car companies because they, didn't anticipate this pickup in demand. They went out and bought a bunch of cars, and now your average car has gone up, used car has gone up by $2,000 or $3,000.
Are the factories even able to produce many cars right now, or are they getting any? Are there no cars coming out?
They can produce the car, and then they park the car that can't be driven because they don't have the chips.
So are there no chips coming into the factories?
There's some, but it's not equaling the car output.
So is the chip shortage because of materials or labor or both, or?
I think it's materials and labor. I mean, it's just capacity is
a huge one.
Yes,
yeah.
It was lack of planning. So there's a 3 or 4 month lead time to make these chips, and these OEM manufacturers, car manufacturers and such, just did not order new chips because they thought, they didn't expect this much demand. So now, after they realized that demand was going to, stay high, they are scrambling for these chips. And
I tell you, that's not the only thing. You cannot buy a new bicycle, or order one. I mean, they're just,
really?
Yeah, the parts, those Shimano gears and stuff like that. It's the workings of the bike. That's the problem you're having with, and a lot of people move towards wanting to own a bicycle.
Right.
During COVID, and you can't get them. Huh. I mean, there's not a lot of inventory out there.
One of the things I thought was interesting on the inflation number two, most of the increase came from categories with a combined weight of 13%. And if you look at, for example, airline prices, that was a big component of it. So they fell 30%. Between February 2020 and May, they are still, though, 18% below pre-pandemic levels. So you from the base, they've moved up, but they're still below where they were pre-pandemic. Airlines, hotel rooms, those are still below pre-pandemic levels.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, it is pretty alarming, and now all of a sudden everyone's talking about inflation. But as of now, there is no reason to believe that this is going to sustain. And when I say sustain, I mean like the 70s, when it just kept going up year after year. As of now, it still seems like, if some of these supply bottlenecks go away. Shipping rates come down, shipping rates, by the way, have gone up like 5 or 6 times. Mm-hmm. So it's expensive for people even to ship some of these things. So maybe they're putting that off, and that's why there's a shortage of a lot of things. But the real danger is that inflation becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it sustains, and then you can't bring it down. That's what happened in the late 70s, leading up to the early 80s, when you know the central bank had to raise interest rates rapidly, and that could be a risk to the economy and the market. But as of now, there's still no reason to believe that that's the case.
What I was going to say too, Adarsh, is you know, typically for inflation to be sustained, it has to be demand driven more so than anything, and this has been, like you said, supply events. However, inflation, as Tom has said many times on the radio, inflation is psychologically driven. You were talking about the self-fulfilling prophecy, where if, and so what I would be, you know, what I would be keeping my eye on is how long the supply bottlenecks last, how long these constraints last, because what can happen potentially is that the supply constraints last so long that it flips into a demand, a demand inflation at that
point.
Yeah,
but then people just decide, well, I just don't need that thing. And they drive their old car a little longer, and they just don't go out and buy it. They don't buy it because you can't get it. And
that's where the psychology comes into it, where it could happen that way, or it could potentially say, all right, this is going to last. This is going to continue. I need to get this now.
I was up, and I don't shop much, but sometimes when I'm out of town, I do. I was up in Indiana, and in a True Value hardware store in Carmel, Indiana, and they had all this kind of stuff. They had all these green egg grills. They had about 12 of them out on the floor. Small ones, big ones, large ones. I mean, there's no problem producing those puppies. They had a lot of these Traeger grills. Those are all getting produced. It's interesting what's being produced. I mean, I drove around Lowe's. I every now and then, if I'm out, just have I had some time about 6 o'clock this morning. I was going to work out. I drove around the Lowe's over on Richmond Road. There was a lot of lumber there. I don't know where they're coming up with this thing and no lumber. I mean, there were stacks of it. I drove over by 84 Lumber. They had lumber. Who's saying there's no lumber? But they say it's gone up fivefold. I don't know. Maybe they're going to sell it for that. The other thing they had a bunch of were Weber and these different kind of – there's a Weber grill that's not a round one. It's a gas grill. Mm-hmm. You know, they had those. They had those in every price range. So, but people were telling me back during the pandemic that you couldn't find basic things at Lowe's. A lot of stuff was gone, you know, building material and things for, you know, screws and brackets and things of that nature. You couldn't get it.
Electrical boxes. I think that last electrical I heard box. That was the biggest one.
Yeah. And copper one. Wire is high, you know, but I mean, but then there's other things that you can find, and I don't know why or how, but it's the case.
There's also this concept of elasticity, you know, and all that means is that there are certain goods and services where people will pay a higher price if prices go up.
Because they got to have it.
Yes, and gasoline is one example. If you need gas in your car to go to work, you will pay, you know, $5 for it. But after a certain point, you will just postpone buying that grill. So I think, you know, it takes a lot for inflation to really take hold. And inflation in the 70s was, you know, driven by gasoline prices going up and other commodity prices going up. But if inflation is a result of psychological phenomenon, you know, where people just want to buy things because they think the price will go up even more, that sort of inflation is easier to put an end to, because that at that point the Federal Reserve will just come in and hike interest rates, where you know, liquidity will be taken out. So I mean, it takes a lot for inflation to become sustaining.
It's interesting, you look at the, you know, today the 10-year bond is at 164 basically, and you know, today you're having, you know, a rally. Yesterday it went up too, but you're having a big rally and tech and, you know, the Russell, big time, both of those today. And you know, the biggest fear for tech recently has been, you know, interest rates going up and discount rate and adjusting the multiples. And you're not seeing that. So in the same vein of inflation, the 10-year is not really moving much. I mean, it's now basically where it was, you know, probably 3 months ago around there. I mean, right. It's fluctuated, but it's just kind of fluctuated around that same level.
That's true. Yes. So, I mean, just a year ago, we didn't know how long it would take for things to get back to normal. And, you know, October, November of last year, things started getting back to normal much sooner than people expected. So it was pretty normal for interest rates to go up because we went from almost serious recession levels to now, I would say, normal levels. It happened fast, and I think that's what scared people. But then the reopening of the economy and the comeback of life to normalcy also happened very fast. So I think interest rates just reflected that.
The other thing that's been interesting has been, you know, the earnings. You know, we're just kind of coming out of, you know, a lot of the major companies releasing their earnings, and generally they've been quite good. You know, the big tech stocks were good. A lot of the blue chip companies, they've been strong. But the interesting thing you had, like on Apple, for example, you know, killer earnings, and you had the stock price drop a little bit right after. That was something we were all kind of watching as stuff was coming out. See, how's the market going to react to this? Because, you know, the question is, especially on these that had run up a lot, you know, how much is being priced in already? It was interesting to see, especially on the big tech, where they had the sell-off following the big earnings. But now there seems like they're starting to get traction again. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. And that happens often, you know, where, prices move up in anticipation of good earnings. And that's exactly what we saw over the last year. In fact, with a lot of tech names, certain things are here to stay, you know, where people are going to keep using Zoom or, DocuSign or some of those.
If we hadn't had a pandemic, there's no way Zoom would have become as big as it is.
Right.
Has.
Right.
I mean, but you got Microsoft Teams and things of that nature.
Google.
We've used them, and they're the same as Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But why Zoom?
So, one of the differences I was reading about that this morning is that Zoom is good at integrating with your vendors and your customers, but Teams is good for inter-office communication. Yeah. And companies use both Zoom and Teams together. These things are here to stay, and the prices reflected not just this year's earnings, but perhaps the next few years. So now they may take, something like Zoom may take a few years to get back to where it was last year. Something like Apple has been going sideways since last August. So eventually, you know, if earnings keep growing, then at some point, you know, it may start moving up again. So it's just interesting that the pandemic changed the, you know, dynamic of how the economy works, perhaps for the long run, especially when it comes to the adoption of technology by different companies.
Right.
You know, our listener base, you know, we don't know who's listening and when they started listening.
So I think we should start an email address where they can send us feedback on the show.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
Well, there are two different ways they can do that. One is...
Why don't we ever tell them?
Because we send them to the website. They can contact us there, DupreeFinancial.com.
I'm talking about if they're not interested in...
There is a chat
opening
with
an account. Let
me finish. There is a chat widget on the homepage of the website where they can contact us. Give us their email. They also can email us at info@DupreeFinancial.com.
Well, we've done a hell of a job of publicizing it.
He's winding me up, listeners. He is poking the bear. Good grief, you people.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to start wrapping it up. Right now, And I'm going to play a little tightrope since that seems to be.
I guess we had a good show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much for that.
All right. All right. So this song is called Tightrope. If you want to hear more of the Tom Dupree Show, go to DupreeFinancial.com. There's a blog and radio tab where you can find. This is also Tom's friend Leon Russell, this tightrope song. Anyway.
Yeah, he does. You've changed.
This is not upbeat, but it was deliberate. I will say that. Anyway, we appreciate you listening.
Sorry. Good job, honey.
We hope that you good learned job. Something. Educate, guide, and empower is our motto. Tune in next week for more of the Tom Dupree Show. Have a great week.
Bye.
If you call in, be ready to speak your mind.
Absolutely. I think so.
News Radio 630 WLAP, where Lexington comes to talk.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Hey, are you looking to buy a new car? Are you stuck in a high-rate loan and looking to refinance? Well, UK Federal Credit Union can help. Right now, UK Federal Credit Union has auto loan rates as low as 2.99% APR. Apply for an auto loan online at ukfcu.org or in person at the dealership. Get your dream car today at UK Federal Credit Union. UK Federal Credit Union, it's banking, only better. Annual percentage rate, member qualification supply, rating subject to credit approval and subject to change. For full disclosures, visit ukfcu.org, federally insured by NCUA.